Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi-yo. Welcome to Kiwi's Birth Tales. My brother name is Ollie and I'm Die Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
Kia ora and welcome to Kiwi Birth Tales. I am your host, Jordan. I'm a mum of two. I have Jai, who will be four in December, and Ali, who is two this month. I cannot believe it. My boys are getting so old. It makes me so emotional. But I'm the host of Kiwi Birth Tales, and I am also a business owner. Your Birth Project is my business baby. And Your Birth Project is an online hypnobirthing course designed to help you create your best birth. So if you're pregnant or you know someone who is, make sure you go and check out Your Birth Project. It is going to help you cure all of those thoughts that you might be having that make you feel a little bit anxious about birth, or just give you the knowledge that you need to make informed choices and feel really good about your birth experience afterwards. So make sure you go and check that out. Goodness me, I feel like I've been saying it's been a week or it's been a month for this whole year. It's the 5th of September today when this episode comes out. And honestly, when am I going to get my shit together? I don't know. You tell me, maybe 2024. But I'm back from my holiday in Fiji. I am back to work, back to real life, and I am back into podcasting. I've got some amazing birth stories lined up for you, and they are scheduled already, so you're not going to miss them. And I've also got some wonderful block season episodes coming with some incredible guests that you're just going to love. So make sure you are either subscribed or you're following wherever you listen to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast so you do not miss those. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do that at Kiwi Birth Tales or at Your Birth Project. Today, I have a wonderful episode coming to you from Kelsey. And Kelsey is a mum of one. She's got a little girl named Blake. And she's got quite a long journey to share with us. She had a fertility journey that took about 2 years, and she ended up getting some support to fall pregnant, her and her hubby. And yeah, she talks us through her journey with that, her pregnancy, and then a premature labor and birth at 33 weeks, which was just another spanner in the works for them. So I know you're going to enjoy this story. Kelsey does a really great job of talking about all of the different things that they have experienced, and I just really love chatting with her. So I hope you love it too. I'd love to hear from you if you want to send me an email, Jordan with a Y at kiwibirthtales.com, or just find me on Instagram at kiwibirthtales. Okay, let's jump into the episode. Enjoy.
Hey, Kelsey, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on the podcast and share my story.
Amazing. I'm excited too. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yes, absolutely. So I am Kelsey and I am a first-time mum. I am married to my husband, Jono, and we recently have just had our first daughter. Her name is Blake and she is coming up 5 months old. And we also have our dog, who is pretty much the first baby in our family.
Yeah, amazing. And whereabouts in New Zealand do you live?
We are from Hamilton.
Awesome. Very cool. I love the name Blake. It's always been on my girl name list. I just think it's such a cool name. I love it.
We love it so much. We actually had picked it quite a long time ago, and I almost feel like we actually manifested a girl. Like, we always just talked about having a girl just for her to have her name. We just love it.
Yeah. I love that. Awesome. Amazing. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about all things pregnancy, birth, and postpartum mum life for you today. But why don't you start us off with what the journey to pregnancy was like for you and Jono?
So our pregnancy journey was a little bit longer than I had originally thought. I was kind of a little bit naive and thought maybe it would take like 3 to 6 months. And then 2 years later, we finally fell pregnant, which to me felt like eternity. And I know in the grand scheme of things, like, there are people out there that wait a lot longer, and my heart goes out to them. But yeah, just it did feel like quite a long time when we did get to getting the positive test. It was just the best thing in the world.
Yeah. And if you don't mind me asking, Kelsey, how old are you?
I am 32.
Okay. Because I know there'll be guests listening that, like, you know, of all different age groups who are going through sort of similar things. And I think it's always of interest how old you are. So thank you for sharing that. Do you want to take us through, I guess, initially, did you come off contraception? And you sort of mentioned thinking it would take like 3 to 6 months maybe. What sort of happened in that time period? And talk us through your journey with trying to get pregnant.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we first started trying, it was kind of like my husband was like, yep, let's start trying. We weren't necessarily ready, but we were keen to just get started. And then kind of each month went past and I was like, oh, I just feel like there's something not right, but I'm not sure what's going on. And everyone kept saying, at the start, we kind of kept our pregnancy journey to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then as the months went on, we kind of shared that we were kind of trying for a baby. So then more people kind of got involved and like gave us information. And they said around the year mark is when you should start kind of getting worried. So I was like, okay, all right, a year, like that feels like forever. And then when we did get to that year mark, we went to the doctors and just kind of explained what was going on. And my doctor put a referral into Fertility Associates in Hamilton. And we had to wait a couple of months to get an appointment to go there as well. So when we finally did get our appointment, it was quite exciting. It just felt like we were steps closer to getting our baby. And so we went and we talked to a doctor called VP, and he actually said to me, like, I don't really see anything wrong. Like, everything that I was going through, he didn't seem to think that there could be something wrong. But he said, I could have endo, and would I be open to having some endo, a laparoscopy, I think it's called. Is that right? Yeah, so... And then I got put on the wait list for that as well. So it always felt like the can was being kicked down the road quite a lot. Nothing happened very quickly. And I'm a very impatient person and I love things to happen very quickly. So it was like I really had to learn patience throughout this whole journey.
Yeah.
And then in December, we finally got our laparoscopy surgery, or I did. They actually found that I did have a little bit of endo, but not a lot. They said it was basically nothing that would cause us to not fall pregnant, which I found really interesting.
Did you have other endometriosis symptoms?
I just had quite like painful periods, but nothing extreme. Yeah, so I kind of thought, I don't know, like, is that normal? Like, to get period pain? I just thought it was normal. Yeah, so then we had that, and then nothing really happened again for a little while. So I was like, okay. And we still hadn't, throughout this whole time, we just kept trying naturally in the hopes that, you know, we'd get signed up to public funding. Because then we did talk to the doctor, and he said that because we had been trying for so long, he actually took it from when we first met, because I was never on any contraception at all. So he said that that actually counts as some of the time that we hadn't been trying, but he put it for our case. So then we got points, which then led us to getting publicly funded IVF, or putting together like a case for that. So then we got on that list, and we were told that that was going to take 2 years. Again, someone who's very impatient was like, oh, wow, this is going to take forever. And then we had just kind of decided that that was great that we were on that list, but we weren't going to wait the full 2 years.
Yeah.
We just really wanted our baby. So we were going to do it privately. And then one day I just happened to open my emails and it literally looked like a scam. but it said that we had been invited to join a study and that we would get access to our publicly funded treatment earlier and that we would actually start in like a month or two. And I was like, this cannot be true. Like, this, someone's pranking me. So I quickly called my husband. I was like, you'll never guess what's happened. And he was like, nah, it can't be true. But it actually was.
Yeah, amazing. And did you, like, oh my gosh, I actually know the kind of email you're talking about because I think my friends showed me one before. And it actually does look like a scam. So did you call and, like, try to figure out what's going on here? Yeah, take us through the next steps and what happened next.
So I immediately emailed back because I was like, if it's a scam, they're probably going to want, like, some sort of like bank details or yeah. I'm not sure what they're gonna want here. So I just immediately emailed back and they had like all the legitimate details, like my doctor's name, how long we've been trying for, and I was like, a scammer just can't get this stuff. So it must be true. And then they kind of outlined the case study and that it was to do with the study of IVF versus IUI. And that you get put in a pool and you get chosen for one and then you get that. And then so we were then put into a pool and we got chosen for the IUI study, which in my head I was kind of like, damn, because I had known so many people that had done IUIs and they hadn't found it to be super successful. So I was almost like, I wish I had been put in the IVF pool because, again, me being impatient, I was like, that's the fastest way to a baby is IVF. Mm-hmm. But I was still very grateful that we could do the IUI.
Yeah.
And then it actually meant that we got 4 rounds of IUI plus then our 2 still free rounds of IVF afterwards. So I felt like we had so many more chances.
Yeah, amazing. And so talk us through the process from there, like what happened next and how do you work through the study and talk us through what happens from now.
Cool. So then what happened was we had to basically just wait for my first period. They said that the study was going to take place in July, so whenever my period started in July is when we were going to start the study. And then I think I was given some medication to take, some bloods to do. I had a Skype with my fertility doctor VP and he just kind of talked us through what would happen. And then honestly, it took so long for my period to arrive in July. It came on the last day of July.
Oh no, that is so typical.
I was like, what are the chances of this? I was like, is it even going to count? Like, what is going on? Typical when you're waiting for a day. And then so we began taking, I took some medication and I was being sent in for blood tests quite a lot, which was quite hard because I actually have a phobia of needles. Like, I'm terrified. When I'd go in, I'd have to get my husband to come with me. I would almost faint, like I'd go white, and he's just looking at me like, oh my gosh, you're so silly. And by the end of it, I was fine with needles. So that was also a blessing as well. So as soon as my period had stopped, and then all the daily blood tests kind of ramped up even more because they had to kind of figure out when I was going to ovulate. And then I had to go in for scans and check my follicles. And in our first round, they found that I produced too many follicles. So before we could even like complete the full cycle of IUI, it had to be cancelled because they were just too big and I had too many. So they said if I was to fall pregnant, I could end up with like 9 eggs and be pregnant with 9 children.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that is really dangerous. So that was quite heartbreaking because I knew that the whole journey was going to be hard, but I didn't realize how hard it would be. Like, I kind of was hopeful that maybe it would happen on the first round. So when it didn't happen and it was cancelled, I was devastated. I remember calling my husband. He was actually away on a boys' night. And I just remember calling him, like, couldn't even really breathe. I was just so upset that it was kind of over. But he's so good. He's really positive. And he's like, that's okay. We know. Like, we'll just do another round. And we kind of know what we're in for the next round. Like, I knew this is what we were going to do.
Mm.
And how it was going to work. So that was kind of good.
Yeah. And how were you feeling, like, mentally after that, preparing for another round? And, yeah, talk us through what happened next.
I kind of went into it like a second chance. I was like, okay, here we go. Like, we're into round two. We've got four rounds in total. So that's another three rounds. And I just had I felt like I had quite a positive outlook on it. I felt like I needed to be positive for myself to get through it in case we were going to have another round of not working. And then I imagine it would be quite draining, especially like IUI is not as intense as IVF. So my heart goes out to all the people who do IVF and what that takes on your body, whereas IUI is just you're taking some medication, you go on for scans, and then at that time I hadn't realised the next part of it. But once we got to the second round, I did feel quite positive, which was great. Yeah.
And talk us through the second round of IUI. How did it go? And, yeah, what happened next?
So this was actually this time last year, which now I think back to it is just crazy. Father's Day last year, we actually spent in the blood test place getting bloods done ready for the second half of the IUI. So we must have realised that, because what happened for this round is they made my medication like a half dose. So that hopefully, in hopes that I would only produce half of the follicles so that I wasn't going to make nine babies. And then we went in and we did the bloods. So then we went in for our scan and we found that I still had a lot of follicles, to the point where my doctor had said, you've actually still got a lot of follicles. And at that moment I was like, oh no, here we go again. And she said, our next step would be to quarter the medication. She's like, I've never actually had to do that for anyone yet, but you may be my first person because you're just still producing too many follicles. So I kind of walked away from that little scan going, oh man, here we go. But she had said they were quite good sizes and she was just hoping that some of the smaller ones weren't going to grow in the next couple of days, which worked out perfectly because they didn't. So we could actually complete the second half of our IUI. And then I remember the day of our IUI. It was such a strange thing because my husband had to like do his part at home and then take in his sample to the clinic. And he was like, I can't walk up the stairs with this in my hands. Like, I just can't do that. He handed it to me. So I'm like walking up the stairs with a brown paper bag. Like, hello, here you go. Handed his sample over. And then they said that you drop it off and you go away and they clean it and they like just check that it's all okay. And then you come back for the procedure a little bit later on in the morning, which is so interesting. I would love to know what they actually do with the sperm.
In that time.
And then so we went away, we had a coffee, and then we went back and like we walk into the room and there's the bed and then you can actually see, and I've got pictures and I was looking at it the other day, of the little container with the sperm in it, which is crazy because now that's our daughter like in the jar. And then so I lay down and she pretty much just like inserted the sperm. She could tell exactly where it needed to be. I'm not quite like sure how the whole thing works, but she put it back inside me like exactly where it needed to be. So it was easier to find for the sperm to swim up. And then she said to me, in 1 hour's time, the sperm will have met the egg, so you could potentially be pregnant in like an hour's time. And so I remember writing that down. We were quite big into manifesting at that time, and at that time actually I was going for a walk each morning and I was listening to your podcast every morning to manifest and like listen to birth stories and just like get myself into the, yeah, it was so such a beautiful time. I actually really look back on it now, and because I would go for walks before I started school. I'm a school teacher. And like the sun was rising and I was listening to your podcast and it was just such a beautiful time. And then, yeah, I feel like we manifested her. So then I wrote down, like, at this time, the sperm is going to meet the egg and then we'll be pregnant. And then that was it. They just say, you go off. It was a really good procedure. And now the 2-week wait begins, which was crazy. Yeah. All this kind of hype. And then you just go away.
Yeah, amazing. And talk us through the next steps. So you go home and, yeah, what happens over the next few weeks?
So then I basically just carried on life. Like, I didn't want to think about it too much because the first round hadn't worked. I was kind of like, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, I know we've still got 2 rounds, but I'm still trying to be quite hopeful and we were still manifesting. We have a special book that my mum gave me and it's a story called Before You Were Here. And we would read that every morning and would actually read it to our dog. And then about a week later, no, it must have just been before my period was going to start. I think my period was due to start on the Thursday. And on the Saturday, I was kind of like, if I test, it might come up. But I was like, I just want to find out that I'm not pregnant through a test rather than them calling me because you go in for bloods on that Thursday and they call you. And I was like, I don't want to find out over the phone. So I didn't have any symptoms. I was kind of like, I'll just do a test and I'm sure it will be negative like it has been, but I'll just do it anyway. And so I walked to the dairy, which is hilarious because it's maybe like 800 meters from my house. And on my journey to back to my house, because I'm a teacher, I actually have kids at my school that live on the street, and so I'm walking back with a pregnancy test in my hand because I didn't take a bag. So I'm really thankful I didn't bump into anybody. And then my husband, he's a real estate agent, so he was actually going out for a really big day of work, so he was like, I'm going up for the day. And then I just popped into the bathroom and I did a test, and that was just before he left. And I walked out, and when I first glanced at it, I thought it was negative. So I just put it down, and then I said goodbye to him. And then I went back for some reason. I don't even know why I went back. And I looked at it, and there was a faint line. And I was like, no, it can't be. And so I brought it out to the lounge, and I looked at it again. And I said to my dog, George, I was like, George, I think I'm pregnant. He must have just looked at me like, what are you talking about?
Oh my gosh, amazing. I can so relate to like telling your dog important news. So I feel like they're the first ones to find out lots of stuff. But I can't imagine it gave you too much of a reaction. So what did you do next?
Then I took about 7 more tests. Is it just an indent line? Like, I'm not sure because it was really faint. So I was thinking, is it an indent line? But then when I did the next test, it came up again. And then I literally did 7. So they were like sitting there.
Oh my gosh.
They were all sitting on the bench. And then that day was actually my father-in-law's birthday. And so we were all going to a cafe for brunch. And because my husband was still, he was having like a really big day of work, I knew I couldn't tell him during the day because then he would go to work and he wouldn't be able to concentrate. So I went to this brunch and I sat at this table and I knew I was pregnant, but nobody else did. And my husband didn't know. And it was so hard. It was really hard. It was like the longest day of my life. And then I even had a like a bottomless brunch to go to. And I didn't drink, but I didn't like, I was like, oh, this is the first time I've gone to somewhere knowing that I'm pregnant and that I can't drink. Like, it was such a strange feeling. And one of my friends actually said to me, Kelsey, are you okay? Because like, you're a bit shaky. And at the time I was just like, oh yeah, I'm a bit tired, but it was because I had actually just found out I was pregnant after 2 years of trying. It was just like the best feeling, but I was still like in a bit of disbelief.
Yeah. And how did you tell him? So talk us through telling him.
So he then came home from work and we like to go on little drives. So I said, let's go on a drive. And we had this special box with like lots of little baby things that we had kind of collected over the past 2 years. And I was like, let's take the box. And that's not unusual because we often did take the box with us. And then we'd just have like a little drive around and read our special book. And then I put a pregnancy test in a box that he pulled over. And I just handed him this box. And I'd written a little note being like, you're actually going to be a daddy. And I handed it to him. And he just looked at me and he said, what does this mean? And I was like, that means I'm pregnant. There's actually a baby in my belly. And he was like, oh my God. He was like, no way. And I think he was in quite a lot of shock as well.
Yeah.
But it was really special.
Yeah. Amazing. It's so cool. And so nice, like, obviously, after having a long period of trying for a baby, that you've finally seen that positive line in a pregnancy test. And yeah, just amazing to hear. And I can't wait to hear the rest of it. So talk us through, your first trimester. How were you feeling? Did you decide to go with a midwife for your care? Talk us through those first sort of 10 to 12 weeks.
So immediately after I found out I was pregnant, I had kind of been listening to your podcast and I'd also talked to some of my friends, and I knew that it was sometimes kind of hard to find a midwife. So I got onto that straight away just because I really wanted to find someone who aligned with what I was kind of wanting for my birth. And so I found my special midwife, who is now basically like a member of my family. Like, I love her so much. She's in all of my family group chats. I meet her for coffee regularly. She's just such a special person. So I was really grateful that I had someone really lovely. And then at about week five, I'm pretty sure it was pretty much week five, bang on. So I woke up and I found some spotting, and so I called my midwife straight away and she sent me in for a scan, but because I was only 5 weeks, they actually couldn't see anything at all. Like, it was just too early, which was also a little bit scary. Like, it was just, you want to go in and see stuff, and because I was a first time and I just had no idea what you should see or what you shouldn't see. So that was scary. But I also went in for blood tests and they could see that my HCG levels were still rising and doubling as they should. So they said that was a really positive sign. But I didn't actually stop spotting until week 9. So every time I went to the bathroom, it was a little bit scary. Like, was it going to get heavier? Was this going to be kind of the end? Like, I was just very not sure, and it was just quite a scary time.
And then
one Wednesday I actually had really like quite heavy spotting, and that really made my heart just drop. So I remember I was in Te Awamutu where my family is, and I live in Hamilton, so I drove back. I was calling the scan places. I think I must have been about 7 weeks then. I was calling them like, can I come in for a scan? But my midwife said the best way to kind of look at it at the moment is through blood tests. So I went in for some more blood tests and they were fine. And in between then, bang on 6 weeks, my morning sickness just kicked off. So that was kind of reassuring to me, because from every day from week 6 until week 17, I spewed every morning.
Oh my God. It's like reassuring, but you're like, couldn't there be another symptom?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was always at the same time. Like, I couldn't get out of bed without feeling sick. So then I'd have a piece of toast and my coffee. And then I would get up to go and have a shower to get ready for work. And then I'd spew. Or I'd just be sitting here and I'd be like, I'm going to spew. A couple of times I didn't even make it to the bathroom because it was just that bad. And then because, you know, when you just feel really sick and you've spewed, it just makes you feel icky for the rest of the day.
I just felt
really disgusting all day long, pretty much until 17 weeks.
And how did you go, like, once the spotting sort of stopped and you were obviously doing the blood test, but did you do any other testing in your first trimester?
So I did the NIPT test. I just wanted to make sure that the baby was healthy, and
yeah.
I just really wanted to know the gender. I like to be quite organized, so yeah. I wanted to start on the nursery and buy all the things. So we did the NIP test, which I really, really rate doing that, and I'll do that for every pregnancy, just to know that your baby's healthy.
Yeah,
I think is really reassuring.
Yeah, for sure. And before we jump forward from there, was there anything that helped you with the morning sickness feeling? Like, was there anything that would make you feel any better, anything that you were eating or drinking? Or, yeah, was it just, like, nothing really helped and you just had to wait it out?
Yeah, nothing really helped. It would kind of change each day. And because I just had this disgusting taste in my mouth that I could not get rid of. And, like, it wasn't a metallic-y taste. It was just, like, rubbish is the best way I can describe it. So I try and eat like a mint or just something to kind of freshen my mouth up, but even that wouldn't help. And then the smell of people's breath was just disgusting. But yeah, nothing really helped, unfortunately.
Okay. And so did the NIP test talk us through your second trimester? Did you do all of the other sort of standard testing that's offered in New Zealand, and how were you feeling, come second trimester?
I was feeling so much better post that 17 weeks. I did all the standard testing, I think. Just whatever my midwife would send me things, she'd be like, do this. I'd be like, okay, cool, go off and do that. I just trusted her, so I didn't decline anything. And then, I felt quite good in the second trimester. And then I also found that my bump, to me, I was really proud of my bump, and I was just so excited that I was pregnant. But people would constantly tell me that I was really small, like everyone. And so it was quite disheartening, because I had been on this journey of trying to get pregnant, and then I was really excited to have a bump. And now I look back on photos, like, my bump was small, but the fact that people were telling me my bump was small just it really got me. Like, I was like, someone, please tell me I'm big.
It's funny how people, like, I don't know, they feel the need to comment on, like, the size of somebody's bump in pregnancy. Like, you'd never comment on that at any other time. I just find it so bizarre that we do it in pregnancy.
I know. And just, like, tell a pregnant woman how beautiful they look. No matter, even if your bump is small or your bump is big, like, you feel beautiful, or you are carrying, like, a beautiful life. And just to be told that you look beautiful, even if you don't, like, I'm very, just blows my mind as well.
Totally. Okay. And how were you going in terms of, like, planning for birth? Were you joining any antenatal groups? Did you do any other birth education? How were you feeling, like, throughout your pregnancy about having to give birth at some stage?
I was really excited to give birth. I was going into it really excited to meet our daughter, and I knew that I was going to be in a lot of pain, but at the end of the pain would be her. So it was just going to make it all worth it. We did do antenatal classes, which I'm glad we did do them, but I also felt like it was very birth orientated and nothing really about afterbirth, which once we had our baby, and we'll probably get to that a little bit later, but I had no idea. I had really wanted to do your birth project as well. But I ended up having our daughter quite early, so I didn't get to do any of that stuff.
So talk us through where you got up to in pregnancy, how were you feeling, and, what happened next?
So I had got up to 33 weeks and 3 days. And before that, like, I had really been manifesting a birth center birth. I had talked to my midwife quite a lot about it. And I said, I really want to be at a place called Waterford here in Hamilton.
Yeah.
And so we had went around. We had actually, like, I've got pictures of the birth room. We were planning on birth room 2 in Waterford. I had taken pictures of the room, and I was really trying to manifest that's where I was going to be. I was really keen to be there. So I said to my husband, like, I don't want any drugs. I don't want an epidural because that means that I have to go to the hospital for an epidural. So I want to try and do it naturally or with gas or whatever I could at the birth centre. And so we had been talking a lot about that, but he had said to me, just remember that things can go differently. So just be open. And so I made midwife and I was like, yep, that's okay. I understand. And I know that we're close to the hospital. So if anything did need to happen, we can just go there. Or if we end up there, I'll be fine. Yeah. And then all of a sudden at 33 weeks and 3 days, that all very quickly changed. Yeah, it was Easter weekend. Easter Sunday morning, basically. It was 2 a.m. in the morning and I just got up to go to the bathroom. And I heard this popping sound. I was like, surely that can't be. Like, it's just too early. I was like, it's not. You're making things up. Like, go back to bed. So I got back into bed and I lay there and it just felt like I was peeing myself. But I definitely wasn't peeing myself. And I was like, uh-oh. This is not good. So I got up, got to my dresser, got a spare change of clothes, and then I got changed, which now I look back on was such a silly idea because that wasn't really going to change anything. My waters weren't going to stop after just a little bit, but I had no idea. And literally by the time I put my new clothes on, they were wet again anyway.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And then I woke up my husband and I was like, darling, something weird has happened. And he was so calm. He was just like, oh, what's going on? Like, are you okay? And I really thought that he would freak out because we were still so early. We hadn't prepared so much stuff. We had been away at the beach, so nothing was organized. And then he was like, okay, what do we need to do? So we called my midwife and she was like, you're going to need to come to the hospital. You're still really early, Kelsey. And then at that point, my body just kind of went into shock and I just couldn't stop shaking, which was really scary. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. That feeling of like anxiety about your baby and what's going on in your body. Yeah. That would be awful.
Yeah. And also just like, why has this happened? Like, it's just so early. Like, why?
Yeah. Yeah. And so you went to the hospital. Did they get you, like, what sort of tests did you have to do and what happened from there?
So we got to the hospital and my midwife met me at the doors, which was so reassuring because she just gave me a big hug, took me into the room, and she tested for the waters, like the liquid, just to check that it was actually my waters that had broken. But before she even did the test, she was like, Kelsey, I can see this is your waters because it's like a pinky kind of colour. So then they sent me off for some more bloods as well. And then they also gave me the first sterine injection. They said this was just kind of like a safety thing. And they put it in my leg, which really hurt. I don't know if anyone's ever had it, but it really, really hurt. It was so stingy. And then they also got a ultrasound machine just to check that my baby was okay. And they wanted to see how much fluid was still around her, if there was any. So that was quite reassuring as well, just being able to see her. She was having a great old time in there. She had no idea what was going on, really. And then by the time this all happened, it was about 5 a.m. by the time they said nothing's really happening. They could kind of see some contractions going on the machine when they put the belts around my belly, but they said nothing's happening, so you're just going to go up to the ward, which was a bit crazy. And when we had been talking to the people down, because we were in labor and delivery when we first got there, I said, like, when am I actually going to be able to go home? And someone said to me, you're not going home until 37 weeks.
Mm.
And I was like, that's crazy. I'm only 33 weeks. Like, that's over a month in hospital.
Yeah.
Which to me was heartbreaking because I hadn't even got into the nesting stage. Yeah. I was about to,
yeah.
It was school holidays. So I was really excited to kind of do some stuff then. And then I was going to go back to work for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And then I was actually going to be on maternity leave. And you just have this strong urge to nest. And mm-hmm. I just really wanted to nest. And I yeah. didn't get to do it.
Yeah.
But that's okay. And then, yeah, they sent me up to the ward, woke up in the morning, and they said nothing had happened. So I was just going to stay in for a couple of days or a couple of weeks. Just they didn't really have any idea of how long I'd stay there for. So then on that Sunday morning, a doctor came and said that I was going to get an iron transfusion because some of my bloods had come back quite low. Which at the time I was like, they said, would you be interested in that? And I was like, yeah, sure.
Mm.
Sounds great to me. I'm here anyway. And then, so I had that. And then for the next like 2 nights, nothing really happened. Like I had some mild contractions overnight, but they gave me some stronger than paracetamol drugs. I want to say codeine, but it might not be the one that they gave me.
Yeah.
And they said, if you can sleep through that, you're not in labor. So I was like, okay, great. I'm kind of sleeping through this, so I can't be in labor.
Yeah.
And it kind of changed each day with the different midwives coming up. Like, the care very much changed. They were so lovely up there, though. It was quite a beautiful experience, even though it was not what I really wanted.
Yeah.
The people who were looking after me were so beautiful. And then on the Tuesday, it all changed. Like, it was just crazy. Someone in the morning, the doctor and some nurses came and said to me, you're going to go home tomorrow because in the first 48 hours after your waters break, that's when you're most at risk at going into labor. And if nothing happens after then you probably will be okay.
Yeah.
And so the doctor came around and said to me, you are going to go home tomorrow. And then someone after that came and gave me my induction date, which was going to be the 11th of May. So I was like, great, I'm going to go home for a month. I can nest. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, I can nest my home. Like, I can get every little bit perfect. Yeah. And then that afternoon, it all changed. And at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, my back just started really hurting and I couldn't really sit down and I couldn't stand up. So I asked the midwife who was looking after me to hook me back up to the machine because I just didn't feel right. And you know, when you just don't feel right and you know deep down something's going on, but only you know that. So the midwife hooked me up to the machine and she came back like 20 minutes later. She was like, nothing's going on. And as she was there, I had quite a big contraction and it made my baby's heart rate drop. So she said to me, I'm just going to go and get the doctor because this, like, the heart rate's gone quite low and I just want to double check that everything's okay. So I just expected the doctor to come back and say, everything's fine. You're still going home tomorrow. But then she said to me, has anyone checked to see if you're dilated at all? And I was like, no, no one has checked me. Not like since I've come into the hospital at all. So from that time to now, haven't even been checked, which you'd think maybe they would check it, but I'm not sure. And then so she brought some gas back because she said to me, it can be quite painful. So I was like, okay, sounds great to me. And she put me on the gas and then she said, you are 6 centimeters dilated.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, what the heck? Because just before that nurse had said, I'm going to go and get the doctor, she said to me, by looking at the screen and your contractions, you're definitely not in labor. You're not in active labor. Like, this isn't enough to tell me. So in my head, I was like, oh, I'm not in labor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when she said 6 centimeters dilated, I was like, what the heck?
You're like, I am in labor.
Yeah. And she said, I can see your baby's head and I can see their hair.
Oh my gosh.
And my husband and I just looked at each other and were like, oh my gosh, mm. like, this is happening and very quickly.
Yeah.
And then so my mum had actually been with me in hospital, but when I got the midwife to kind of see what was going on, she was like, oh, you're all good. Like, I'll go home. And she lives in Te Amaru, so that's about half an hour away from where we were. So she got home. And then as soon as she got to Te Amaru, my husband had called her and said, Kelsey's in labor. And then she immediately was like, no, she's not, because I was just with her like a little while ago and she was fine. And he was like, no, she's actually in labor and they can see the head. So she had to turn around. And then they said to us, you need to go down to labor and delivery right now, which was just crazy to me. I didn't even think I was in labor.
Yeah. And so what happened, like, from there when you find all of that out? You're obviously trying to process it mentally. yeah, talk us through going down to labor and delivery and then what happened next.
So then they put me in the wheelchair and I was still on the gas, and the gas just made me feel, have you ever been on gas?
Yes, yeah.
It just makes you feel so spacey, doesn't it? Mm.
I liken it to like being like sort of early stages of drunk.
Yes, and it's kind of, you're kind of a bit like disorientated, like all over the show.
Yeah.
And so I remember being wheeled down in the wheelchair and being on the gas, and it was just such a strange feeling because my head was kind of all over the show and then I was being wheeled, so I wasn't even in control of like myself moving.
Yeah.
And then we got in the elevator and we went down, and there was a point where I was like, I actually can't take this gas anymore because I just feel really sick. And then all of a sudden my contractions just started like getting pretty hard out very quickly. And we got to the room and I said to them, I need to push. And they just looked at me and they said, can you not? We haven't even set up the room yet. And I was like, no, I really need to push. Like, I can feel her head. It's right there. And they were like, we don't have anything ready. Can you just please hold off on pushing? And so, and then my midwife arrived because she also had no idea that I was in labor. So I was so thankful that she was able to make it. And then the room just suddenly filled up with a lot of people because my daughter was so early. It was 33 weeks and 5 days. I guess they have to kind of take lots of precautions and make sure there's kind of a person from each area ready to go and jump into action if they did need. So then the room was full. Like, I imagined my birth to be at the birth centre with just my husband and my midwife and my mum and his mum. But it was, like, so different, which was okay. Like, I was okay with it. It was quite positive in the end.
Yeah.
Even though she was so early. And then basically as soon as they put me onto the bed, I was like, I just need a push. And because I had really been planning on doing a birth project, I actually had no idea how to push.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea that you needed to put your chin down and like really push. I was very just, I had no idea what I was doing. So by the time I'd kind of figured out all of that and got really into it, I think I was pushing for about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And then she was there. She came out. And then because she was so early, I thought that she would have to be taken away. Like straight away, like I didn't think I was going to get my skin to skin, which broke my heart, like thinking about it in those kind of days that I was in hospital. So I'd imagined just that special moment.
Yeah.
But she was actually able to be put onto my chest straight away, which was amazing.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah. And then so she was on my chest for a little bit, and then they took her over to the special place to do all the checks.
Yeah.
And then because she was doing so amazing, she actually got to come back for more skin to skin, which was just incredible, considering she was so early. While she was on my chest and my husband was with me, they were wanting me to get the placenta out. They gave me the injection. And it just would not come. Like I said, I've done all this hard work of pushing. Surely this placenta must just be, like, from what people had said, you don't really... Like, you can feel it, but it's not too bad. So I was thinking, this is going to be all right. Like, I'll just get it out and, like, we'll just continue on. But that was not the case. So I also, during my birth, had lost quite a lot of blood. Mm-hmm. And then trying to get the placenta out I had also lost a lot of blood as well. And so they were constantly like picking up like big paper towel type things and like weighing the blood that I was losing. So that was like coming past me. And I also have like I just get funny around blood as well.
Yeah.
So that was going past me to be weighed so that they could check it. And it just wouldn't come. So then the doctor actually had me in the bathroom, like on the rails in the bathroom, like squatting to try and get my placenta out, which just, it wouldn't come either. And they said, maybe it's because you're just so early that the placenta is just not ready to come away.
Yeah.
So that was kind of devastating to me, because then I had to go in for the surgery, which I had done my whole birth without having an epidural or anything, to then have to go in for an epidural just to get out my placenta.
And so what happened with Blake at that time? Was she just down in NICU, or was she with your husband? Yeah, what sort of happened with her while you were recovering?
Yeah, so then they actually took Blake, when I went for the surgery, they took Blake up to NICU and my husband went with her, which he said at the time was really hard. He was like, I wanted to be split into two because I really wanted to be with Blake, but then I also really wanted to be with you to go into the surgery. And they had said to him that the surgery was going to take 15 minutes. So he was like, okay, I'll go up to NICU, make sure that Blake's okay. And she was put into her incubator. And she didn't need any oxygen or any help at all. She just was pretty much placed in the incubator, just with like heart monitors just to check. But they said she just needed to grow basically, which was amazing to hear, considering she was so early. And then I went off for my surgery, which I'm pretty sure it takes like 15 minutes to get the epidural in, so I don't know really why they said 15 minutes to Jono, because then he was standing in the corridor just freaking out because it took like an hour. So I was in there, and it was so lovely because my midwife said, she knew that I was like a bit scared of needles and all that stuff, she was like, do you want me to come with you to the surgery? So she came and she just cuddled my arm and we just talked about random things the entire time. The anaesthetist put on some 660 and we just kind of like chilled. It was just so random. And then when they did try and get the placenta away, it still wouldn't come. So the surgeon like had her hand right up there and was pretty much like tugging at it for quite some time and it just still wouldn't come. And then when she did actually get it, it didn't break away all in one piece. Then she said it's quite dangerous, so she had to kind of do some extra work to the point where she said, I actually have to stop now because if I don't stop, I could cause some damage for you having children later on in life. I was like, oh, God, it's a bit scary.
Yeah. And was she confident that she got it all out, obviously?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
By the end of it.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. And talk us through how your recovery went from that initially. And yeah, what did you do next? How did you like reconnect with Blake and how long did that take? And yeah, talk us through what happened next.
So then I went to recovery and when I said to them, can I please go and see Blake? Because by this point it had been about 3 or 4 hours by the time I'd come out of surgery and gone through all of that. And the nurse said to me, I'm so sorry, but you're actually not going to be able to see your baby until tomorrow because you've had your epidural. You can't get into a wheelchair and we can't take the bed up. And at that stage, I just completely broke down. Like I was so upset. I was just like, I want to see my baby.
Yeah.
It's been like 4 hours. I just want to make sure she's okay. She was early. And yeah, basically just couldn't breathe because I was just so upset. Mm. And then a lovely nurse said to me, no, this lady needs to see her baby.
Mm.
She's like, we will do what it takes. So I was so thankful for her. So she said, we will wheel you up to NICU in your bed. And so they did. So they took me up in the elevator in my bed through the nursery. And then I got to hold her again, which was so special.
Mm.
and just so nice and reassuring to see her again after
quite
a long time, it felt.
Yeah, amazing. And was she like hooked up to lots of machines, or was she just in there like on her own under some lights? Or yeah, talk us through what was that like in those first few couple of days in the queue.
Yeah, so when she was in the incubator, she only had just the monitors that they need to have on when they are in there. So they had some heart just to keep track of her heart. I think she might have had an oxygen one as well, just because she was so early. And then I think that was it. So pretty much just in the incubator.
Mm.
Oh, and then she had a feeding tube as well. So my midwife had said to me, let's get Blake breastfeeding straight away, pretty much.
Yeah.
And the nurses up there had said, you can't start breastfeeding until around the 34, 35 week mark, because their little suction reflex just isn't quite ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad for my midwife, because she was like, no, like Blake has come into this world early and ready to go. Like, we know that Blake is totally capable of doing that. So we actually were able to breastfeed straight away.
Oh, amazing.
Which was so special.
Yeah.
And then from there, she was actually able to come out of her incubator after about 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So she must have been about 34 weeks, between 33 and 34 weeks when she came out of her incubator and into just a normal cot, which to me felt like such a milestone.
Yeah.
Especially because trying to get into the incubator to change them and putting your arms through the holes is just quite hard. And just seeing them in there, especially with your postpartum emotions. Like, I was just for the first maybe week and a bit while she was in there, I cried every day. Just looking at her in this thing. I was like, I just want to take you home. Yeah. And especially because when you're up in NICU, you can't stay with them. So I was at home and I wasn't pregnant anymore, but I didn't have my baby. And it just felt so weird and not right.
Yeah.
And then so I was going up to the hospital every day and trying to recover postpartum. Plus then, like, I was out the door at 7:30 every morning. Mm. And people kept saying to me, like, oh, you've kind of got it like the best way, because you can kind of recover, you don't have to get up to a baby in the middle of the night. And I was like, I would rather have my baby because I'm getting up every 3 hours. Yeah, I was getting up every 3 hours to pump as well. So I was like, I'd rather get up to a baby than a pumping machine. So that was harder. I kind of got over people saying that to me. I was like, don't say that to me anymore.
Yeah, fair enough. And how did you go like with the pumping and the feeding, and what did your NICU journey look like? How long were you there for? And talk us through that.
So I really feel like I've got PTSD around pumping, because in NICU there's like this room, and you go in there and it's for the mums to pump, and just the sound, you'd sit around on like a couch or a table and you just sit there, you get your boobs out and you just pump. And the sound of people's pumping machines and your own is just like, I'll never forget that sound. And walking into the room, you'd always listen out to kind of, is someone in there? Because you could hear the machine going. That was like, oh, I just hated it. And they had kind of said, you have to keep pumping. Even when I stayed with Blake in hospital, they said, you need to keep pumping. So I actually became an oversupplier with my milk because they had me pumping so much to the point where when we did actually leave NICU, I had 6 trays of milk to donate because I just had so much at the hospital and in my freezer at home. Like, we just couldn't fit any more in. So I felt quite good about donating that to people that needed some milk. But Blake was actually able to come home at 35 weeks. So we stayed in NICU for, we only stayed in NICU for 20 days. It was like just a dream come true, really. And it was really hard when we were in there because we were told so many different times. Like, some But depending on who you had as your nurse, they would say, you get to go home when you're full term, or you will be able to go home when you're 37 weeks. And it was very mixed messages to the point me and my husband were like, we don't even know when she's coming home, because people were just so confusing. But one day we got tapped on the shoulder and they said, would we like to, it's called rooming in for anyone that doesn't know, where you stay in the hospital with your baby for a couple of days. Which to me was so exciting. I was like, this is what I've been waiting for. Like, I get to stay in the hospital with my baby. And in that time we had to pretty much exclusively breastfeed, and they said to me, to be able to leave, your baby has to put on weight. It was like 30 grams a day or something. And you have to be able to exclusively breastfeed for 24 hours straight. And so that put quite a lot of pressure on me, because she was so young, she was getting quite tired quite quickly. And so she wasn't having a full feed. I think a full feed was counted as like 15 minutes or something. They said, if you can't reach the 15 minute mark, you're going to have to start your 24 hours again. So I was sitting there like, come on, like waking her up, like rubbing her ears, really annoying her just to get to that 15 minute mark. Like, I don't want to start this again.
Talk us through what happened next. Like, when did you get to go home? How did you feel taking her home? What was it like? Just adjusting to life being so unexpected, I guess, bringing your baby home at this time. And talk us through all the feels.
It was such a wild time, because when we did get tapped on the shoulder and we did get to room in with her, it was quite quick, like, because it was 35 weeks, it was very like my labor just had started quickly, and this had happened quickly. Everything was happening so fast that it was all very much a blur. And then even when we got sent home, so when you're in NICU and you do the rooming in, they say you have to put on weight, or the baby has to put on weight for two consecutive days in a row. And so the first night she had lost weight, so I was thinking the next night that they weigh her, we're going to then at least be there for another night after that, even if she does put on weight. But then they, she put on 60 grams. So they were literally like, you guys can go home. And I was like, really? Like, I thought I had to stay here for another night. And then I just called my husband, because he was doing some work. And I was like, you have to bring this, you have to bring this. Like, we're going home. And he's like on the other end of the phone, like, what? And then, so yeah, when we brought her home, it was very much, it was really, really exciting, but it was also very scary having this little baby who was only 35 weeks. And because it had just started to be winter, I was really worried that she was going to get cold. And in the hospital, they really stress you, keep your baby warm. They even said, like, if you've got a dehumidifier, turn the dehumidifier on 24/7, and like kind of freaked me out. But I was thankful that my midwife was like, don't even listen to that. Like, your house is fine. You live in a warm house. Like, you're okay.
Yeah.
So that was great. And then I was really grateful that she would come and visit us. She, as soon as we got home the very next morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, she came to check on us to make sure that we were okay.
Amazing. And how did you find, I guess the next few weeks and adjusting to life as a mum and recovering from birth? Talk us through what life has been like since.
At the beginning, it was great. Like, she was a very sleepy prem baby because she was so little. All she did was sleep, basically. So we could have her on the couch. We could have her anywhere we wanted. We'd go out to cafes and she would sleep the entire time. And then all of a sudden she just kind of woke up to the world. But before that, we actually, when we were in NICU, we were given a nipple shield to help, because she was so small. They, this nurse had said, it'll make it really easy for Blake to breastfeed. So I was like, okay, sounds great. Like, you guys know. And then we've actually been stuck on that nipple shield ever since we've left the hospital. Like, we're still on it now and we just cannot get off it, which has been quite a hard journey, because the nipple shield is so annoying. I don't know if you've ever used one, but so annoying.
It's so annoying. I did use one for both the boys, and yeah, they are really annoying.
It's just like having to get it out, isn't it? And then like sliding around and just the inconvenience rather than just like getting your boob out. So that's been probably one little struggle for us, to the point where I had a lactation consultant come and just see if she could help. And she kind of looked at Blake and looked at her feeding, and she said, "I actually think that Blake's got a tongue tie." So we went in for tongue tie surgery thinking that that would help. But because it had kind of been so long, Blake's actually adjusted her suck to the nipple shield. And so she, instead of doing like the whole, I think, is it a wave that they're meant to do with their tongue? She goes in and out. So even if she was to latch properly onto my boob, she wouldn't actually really know how to suck properly. I just kind of accepted that that's our journey and that it is what it is. And for the next pregnancy, I will definitely not use a nipple shield if I don't have to.
Yeah, try to avoid them. It's funny, eh? I had to use the nipple shield like for different reasons, and I feel like you can become really reliant on it, but they are just such a hassle, and like having to clean them all the time, it's just so annoying.
Yes, and getting it out, like now I just keep it down my bra, but it is just such a pain.
And how did you find like your physical recovery and like obviously quite an intense surgery after birth, so how did you find you felt physically?
I physically found it definitely while I was going up to NICU quite hard. I was doing quite a lot of walking because at the hospital you have to walk, park your car so far away and then walk up to NICU and then back constantly. But I also found that that maybe had sped up my recovery because I had just kind of got back into it straight away. That after like 2 weeks, I like felt fine, which was great. And I even had a second degree tear because when Blake was born, she was posterior and transverse. So even though she was so small, I still tore. But I had said to my midwife, I was like, "I don't even know where the tear is. Like, I can't even feel it." She was like, "Oh, that's great." She's like,
Amazing.
"I can tell you where it
Awesome. And I know Blake is, about 5 months old now. So talk us through how you've adjusted to mum life, what it's been like for you and Jono, sort of as a couple, and what would you share about your sort of postpartum experience or the last 5 months being a mum?
I have just loved being a mum. I guess because I had been on the journey for so long, I just feel so grateful that we finally have her. It's definitely had some challenging times, especially when she woke up basically to the world from being a prem baby, and she just wouldn't sleep. She was getting very overstimulated by our house just from being in our house. I guess maybe her eyes just started to kind of be able to see a bit more, and she would get like these crazy eyes that would look around our house, and then she would become very overtired within like 5 minutes. It was crazy. So we went from having a very sleepy baby to a very overstimulated baby quite quickly. But now she's settled in, and you would never know she was prem. And we just love her so much. My husband has been so great at helping out. So because she was finding it quite hard to sleep during the day, he had actually started taking her for walks for her afternoon nap, every single day to give me a break. He was like, "I know that like throughout the day when he's at work, it's really hard." So he would come home, take her for a walk just so that I could get the house ready or just have a bath and just like even lie on the couch and do nothing, which I really appreciated because going into that night shift of up every 3 hours and just like having some energy for that, I feel like that made a huge difference for my mental health.
Amazing. Well, is there anything else, Kelsey, that you want to share about your story? Anything that we've missed or yet you feel like we haven't covered?
I did actually write down the midwife care, how when we were in NICU, my midwife was our looking after us while we were in hospital. But then, so that time, it started from when Blake was born.
Mm-hmm.
And then so when she actually came home, we only had her for 3 weeks, which was quite hard because in that stage she was very much a sleepy prem baby. And then by the time we actually got to like the newborn struggles and things that we really needed some help with, she wasn't there anymore. I was really lucky that actually she was my friend now and that I could still ask her. But I didn't want to ask her because I felt bad because my time had ended with her.
I
knew she was there. So I found that really hard.
Is there anything like, are there resources or anything that you've found since that have been like helpful?
Really just listening to podcasts or talking to my sister-in-law. She is amazing. She's like a baby whisperer. And so just pretty much talking to and listening to people for some help. But there was not really any resource. Like we had a hospital nurse come out and help us for a little bit each week. So then I was quite busy because I had my midwife come for the first 3 weeks, plus a hospital nurse. And then we had Plunkett at one stage. There was like a whole heap of people. But then they all stopped and then it was just us in the newborn stage. But yeah, that was hard. And then the other thing that I found quite hard with having a prem baby is the corrected age. So when your baby's taken from their due date, like all the milestones and stuff that we are going through, it's so hard to know where she's actually at because technically she's actually only 3 months old based off my due date, but she's 5 months old, but she's not either of those. She's like somewhere in the middle and I just find it so confusing.
Yeah, that is confusing. I think I find it confusing too. I'm like, what are you talking about? What does that actually mean?
Yeah. And even things like the sleep regression that they talk about, like I have no idea when that's going to hit because we're kind of close to that or past that. It's just, little things that you kind of, you just have no idea about. We'll just wing it. We'll just go through whenever we do.
For sure. I feel like that's what parenting is. Just making it, hoping for the best.
Absolutely.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much, Kelsey, for coming on the podcast and sharing your story with me today. I have really loved talking to you. I know there'll be lots of people that connect with, you know, one part of your story, if not more. And I just think I'm super grateful that you were willing to share. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. I am so grateful that you choose to have me in your ears every week. And just super grateful that you are here. A reminder, if you're pregnant or you know someone who is, make sure you go and check out Your Birth Project. Your Birth Project is going to help you create your best birth, no matter what kind of birth you want to have. So make sure you go and have a look at that. I will be back with another amazing birth story very soon, so make sure you hit subscribe or follow wherever you're listening and you get the notifications when the next episode is out. We will talk soon. Enjoy the rest of your day or night wherever you are in the world.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.